Roosevelt 12 and 12 from New York, PA.
Hi everyone, my name's Doreen Lear. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Doreen.
What a ride.
We had a good job. Had a nice drive down here. Thanks my husband Joe, as you heard. His last name's the same as mine, which I got it from him, so not my fault. My sobriety date's August 9th, 1998, and I belong to the Roosevelt 12 and 12 group. I have a job in that group. I'm the treasurer, and I like money, so I do well with it. They always say every time I get the treasurer position in any home group that I belong to, I end up with a new car. 2017's coming up. So I got a 2016 last year, so yeah. That's just a joke. Yeah, that works. So, as I said, my sobriety date, I have a sponsor. My sponsor had guided me through the 12 steps with her experience, strength, and hope. She never told me what to do. She said, this is what I've done. But my ego said she was telling me what to do. But see, I get this ego about the size of Texas when I get here, and it's telling me that people are telling me what I should be doing instead of sharing their experience, strength, and hope. But until the 12 steps get a hold of me and my life, then I start understanding that people were actually sharing their experience, strength, and hope, and all I was hearing was that. It was all about me. Don't tell me what to do. I'm like 37 when I get here. Don't tell me. I'm a woman. I'm grown. Yeah, in physical form, but in my mind, my state of mind, I probably brought the age of 18 years old in my mind to the rooms of AA at the age of 37 in the body, in the physical form. Because they say you're drinking, when your drunkenness takes off, your mind stops growing. So my drunkenness took off at the age of 18. I mean, that's when I pretty much drank daily for about a year straight. And then I got pregnant, you know, right out of high school into a marriage, because that's what we're supposed to do. As growing up in South Baltimore, that's what I saw all my sisters do. You know, I'm the youngest of eight. So they all got out of high school, right into a marriage and having kids. So I figured, well, maybe that's what I'm supposed to do. I don't, you know, when they ask you when you're 5 or 6, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? Like, I don't know. I just want to grow up first. You know, that's like hard questions. It's like, don't let me ponder something I have no idea. I don't even know if I'm going to live long enough to grow up to be something, let alone, you know, at 5. I mean, that's a lot of pressure for a child. Even if it's 10 things in a year, I'll support you. Because who am I to say what their path is supposed to go or where it's supposed to go? I'm not God in their life either. You know, I'm not even God in my own life. I'm not a God in anybody else's life, even the women I sponsor as well. So I'm going to share what brought me to the rooms of AA. Like I said, at the age of 18, my drunkenness took off. And the reason that is because at the age of 18, back in Maryland, you could drink in bars. It was beer and wine. You just couldn't have hard liquor until you were 21. See, I would never drink hard liquor because I believed that if you drank hard liquor, you'd be an alcoholic. So I wouldn't. I'd drink hard liquor after I was drunk on beer or wine, but I didn't start out on hard liquor, so there's some justification in there. And, you know, I did all the things that we do. You know, at the age of 16, I fell in love with him. I love him. He broke up with me. I'm going to kill me. And he's going to feel really bad when they find me. And as the book describes it, our life is not, you know, this hereafter and this drama of life. Oh my God, it was such a drama. When I look back in hindsight, I'm like, I'm a sick chick. I was a sick puppy, I'm telling you. 16, he broke up with me. And I remember, probably because I wouldn't sleep with him, because that's embark upon the journey of sexual intercourse, and my mom showed up in my mind, you're not supposed to have sex before you're married. And I was like, oh my God, I gotta get out of this car, my mother's with me. Scared the life out of me. I was like, you can't, how do you have sex when your mother's like, don't have sex before you marry?
there's a vision for you, huh? So, you know, the age of 18, I'd like to, at the age of 19, actually, right out of high school, I like to say the gynecologist made the decision for me to get married because I went to get birth control pills and found out I was 2 weeks pregnant. So, back in the old school day, I'm going to be a lot of old school days here going on, guys and girls, because that's where I grew up in. My entire life. I've had bouts of knowing this energy as a child. I think we are already connected, and then society kind of takes that away as I grow up, you know, because people are like, don't do this, don't do that, don't go there. Oh my God, you're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to do that. I'm like, what am I supposed to stand in the corner and don't do nothing? It's like you're afraid of everything because everybody's telling you, oh, don't go there, don't do that. And then they brought in the God thing on me, you know, like, God doesn't like it when you do things like that. And I knew what those things were, and yeah, I was like sexually mindset at the age of 12. Not that I had intercourse, but I've had some journeys through the sexual path. And I was like, yeah, I don't think God likes it when you do things like that. I don't know if God likes it or doesn't like it. I mean, it says God give us these gifts, but to use them, not selfishly, or neither to despise or loathe them, and I didn't know that growing up. You know, I only knew it as this was the dirty thing, because that's how people shared their experience. God don't like it when you do things like that, or God will get you if you do that. You know, so I've had this idea of this God is getting me. Whoa, there goes my story. Oh my God, bring it back now. Had it all written down right by me. So it's like God is gonna get me, and is it okay if I close the book? Not the chapter, just the book. So now I'm like, you know, God's gonna get me for this, and now I'm like, God don't like it if I do things like that, and now I'm laying myself to sleep and I'm saying that prayer. Oh my God, no wonder I fear God when I get to the rooms of AA as an adult, because now I got this prayer. You know, now I lay me down to sleep and I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. And I was afraid to go to sleep because I was scared that the Lord was going to come in the middle of the night and take my soul. And he was going to kill me. And I was like, oh my God. So I'm like trying to stay awake. Every time I hear a creak, I'm like, oh my God, he's going to kill me. He's taking my soul. Oh my God. You know. But now I know the concept of that. Because no evil can get to me as long as I'm connected to my Creator. So if I lay myself to sleep and I die within that moment, the Lord has already taken my soul, so no harm can come to me in that point. I only know that concept through my spiritual journey as of today, how I understand it. So a lot of things have changed in the last 18 and, you know, close to 19 years coming up. Nothing like I expected it to be. So towards the end of my drunkenness, I'm not going to do the whole drunkalog thing because I love the spiritual journey more so than the we all drank, we know how to drink, we've had the sexual capades. If we don't talk about sex, something seriously wrong with us, because I think that was the deepest, darkest secret that was in my fifth step that I was afraid to tell people about. I could tell you about the affairs, and I could tell you about all that other stuff, you know, but it was those childhood sex things that kept me sick, because I couldn't tell it. I mean, who does that to a child? So I couldn't tell those things, but see, I could tell you all the other stuff. So I think that's what keeps, I know me as an alcoholic in darkness until I shed that light with someone else. Only of one other person. I have no shame about the things today because thank God for the 9-step and forgiveness. Guilt, I'm not saying that I'd like to go back and you know, live that experience again, but I will share that experience with you or someone else to say that I know how you felt. And I know I couldn't tell anybody either. But that's not who I am today. Because I've told one person my whole entire story. And that's my sponsor, whom I still have the same sponsor today.
God is my guide. My sponsor is the spiritual advisor. You know, that's how I see it today. And the book describes it as a spiritual advisor. You know, closed mouth friend. I don't have too many of them, but I do have a spiritual advisor. So I get to the point, you know, at the end of my drunkenness, I had a blast. Grew up in the 80s. Still love the 80s music today. Journey, we were listening to it on the ride down here. Yay! Steve Perry, still sexy. Yeah. You know, I've always had Journey and Foreigner. And they were like, man, I could rock to that. Still today, you know. Love disco era, you know, with the dancer. Sometimes I'd black out and not know what kind of dance I did until I went to the bar the next weekend and somebody was like, oh, come on, Dorian, do that thing you did last week. And I was like, I don't know what it was. And then I wonder why I woke up with all these bruises all over my legs and body. Because I know a lot of y'all young and don't remember Striptease with Demi Moore. And she did this thing with a chair. And I thought I was limber enough to do the chair thing, and I wasn't. But I guess I looked good at the time. I don't know. I wasn't there. I was somewhere else. I was like blacked out. I woke up the next day and remember those waking up the next days. And you know, in the beginning it was fun and my kids would laugh and say, hey, Mom, look at Mom. Mom's an alcoholic. And I'd be like, yeah, I finally achieved something when I grew up. Look, I have a drinking career. I can do something. That's what I wanted to be when I grew up. An alcoholic. I don't think that it was in my journey when I was on the path coming to, you know, be a real alcoholic as the book describes and destroying every person and everything in my life. I don't think that's what I wanted to be when I grew up. So I wasn't sure. You know, of course we have ideas as kids. You know, I want to be a nurse, doctor, lawyer, you know, the basic money makers. You know, nobody's ever said, you know, I just want to destroy my family and cause harm to my children through the process so I can get a drink, you know. Thank God for the ninth step on that one. But at the end of my drunkenness, this is basically how I lived. I was on that job, and I know those people on that job were talking about me, and how do I know they were talking about me? Because they were over there amongst themselves, and it had to be about me. And sometimes I'd even go over and say, who are you guys talking about? They're like, we're not talking about anybody, Dorian, we're just talking. But it's got to be about me, because see, I live with this thing, it's called terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. I couldn't have described those words until I read the Vision for You, and it talked about the four horsemen that I carried on my back for probably the last 2 to 3 years of my drunkenness. I remember I didn't want to be on that job because, you know, he makes my skin crawl, I can't stand him anymore, and those kids just don't listen anymore. You know, I'm tired of screaming, I'm tired of yelling, I'm tired of throwing things. Because, see, I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I knew what it was like when the alcoholic came home. And I always said, you know, I'll never be like that. I never called it a him or my father. I would call it it. I would say, here it comes through the door. So we would stand in, like, frozenness, waiting for it to respond. You hear the doorknob, and then you have this, like, all your blood would drain out of your body, like, oh, my God, here it comes. Sometimes my mom would say, run up the steps, hurry up, get to your room before he comes in. And then I ended up being just like that, walking in the door, throwing things, cleaning the breakfast bar off because they had, like, drinks on it, which I didn't want the drinks on it at the time, so I would just spray it all over the wall and then make them clean it up. You know, my children got the bulk of my alcoholism. They experienced the 19 years of the same torture. Last night in my drunkenness, this is what you do, 2 beers in the shower, because who goes out before, you just don't go out drinking to drink, you've got to have drinks before you go drink. It's called priming, you know, you got to like get that edge off, yeah. It's the breath before you can breathe in a bar, you know, it's like you got to get in there, have a couple of beers, so 2 beers in the shower. Just to make
course, you know, my my son just got his learner's permit, and I was like, how proud am I? I mean, this is like a milestone in a young man's life at the age of 16. But you know how alcoholism not only affects us personally, me, but how it affects my whole family? My thought was not, oh my God, I'm so proud of my son. He just got his learner's permit. My alcoholic thinking kicked in first, and it said, he can take me to the bars and he can pick me up, so I won't have to drink and drive. And those were his thoughts too. And boy, did he pick up a mess that night. He picked me up many a night. Look, they said he had to have a licensed driver in the car with them. They didn't say they had to be coherent. Because many a night he drugged me home and I don't remember getting there. That poor kid, I put him through so much. And not only him, the others as well. You know, I don't want to water it down because the emotional sobriety is a journey in itself. And to watch your family live the same lives that you lived, that they experienced. Thank God you have a God in your life, is all I have to say. Thank God I have a God in my life. So I went out, as usual, to get drunk. Never had a few, you know. My first husband was not a drinker. He'd have three beers and want to go home. I'd have three beers and end up in somebody else's home that night. And, you know, he told me if I wasn't ready to go when he was ready to go to find my way home. Yeah, well, it wasn't home. It was home for the night, and then you wake up with the shame and the guilt, and then you got to climb in the window because, you know, you want to get there before the kids wake up. And thank God. It doesn't have to be that way anymore. Thank God. So I was out that night three times. I blacked out. Woke up in the middle of a bar singing karaoke with my sister's friend. Then I blacked out again, and I woke up in another bar, and I was doing the electric slide in the opposite direction of everybody else. Because, you know, I'm doing it right. They're all wrong. There's like 50 people on this dance floor, and they're doing it wrong. So, you know, but long story short, fight breaks out. I ended up in the middle of a city block again, blacked out. I'm standing there and my family's around me. So most of my amends were very general, basically family. I've had, I think, three or four that were off out of the family list. My amends weren't very big because towards the end of my drunkenness, I just didn't want to make friends with nobody. I remember we would move every 3 years because we lived on turnoffs and cutoffs. Daughter's like, oh, Mom, Miss, you know, Michelle's mom and dad wants to meet you, and I'm like, I can't trust people no more. I'm like, no, I don't want to meet them. You know, I don't. I mean, what do you say after hello? You know, I had no social skills. Like, I did a fist step, so it's like, keep me away from your husband. You might want to watch that one, and you might want to watch your dog too. You know, just saying. But, I get to the end and I'm standing in the middle of the city block and my sister-in-law is up ahead of me and she yells, you know, I yelled for her to wait up and she said, well, run. Now, I can't even stand on this dance floor. Do you ever just get to the point where your mind is so, your body is so drunk, it just wants to lay down and your body's like, nope, I'm not done yet. My mind was wide awake. My body was like, just stay. It's like, my sister even did it. She sat me on the edge of the steps underneath of the bar, and she goes, sit, don't move. And I'm like, stay. But my mind's like, I'm not done yet. And I didn't know this was going to be my last drunk, honestly. I don't think I do. I don't think anybody truly knows what the last drunk is. The book talks about it in the family afterwards. It says, God either removes the drink problem or he doesn't. It's not for us to decide. And I didn't know. So it wasn't my decision to not drink that night, you know, to stop drinking. I went out with the blast to see it's a Saturday, and I needed to have my hangover day, you know, with the Sunday to recuperate. So I remember I'm standing there, and my sister-in-law tells me to run, and I take off running. And they have these little curves in the sidewalk where the wheelchairs go up and down, you know.
bike and access the sidewalks and stuff. So I took off running, and I hit this handicap ramp, is what I like to call it, and my face just bounced right across the asphalt. Hands out. I remember sitting in the middle of that city street, and I reached up, and I grabbed my face, and I come down with a handful of blood, and my sister-in-law and my sister-in-law are standing there, and they're like, "Oh my God, Doreen, please don't touch your face." I said, "Debbie, it can't be that bad." So we get back to her house. You know, I was in the medical field at the time, and it's like, clean the wounds. That's what we do. And I'm sitting on the edge of her tub, and I'm scrubbing my face, and my lip was kind of hanging off, so I shoved that back up into place. And she said, "Doreen, please don't touch your face." I said, "Debbie, it can't be that bad." And she said, "Look." Standing in that mirror that night, and I looked at myself for the first time, and I even said to myself for the first time, "What the hell have you done to yourself this time, Doreen?" I didn't even realize that the first part of that first step was in place before I even got to the rooms of AA. I stopped blaming at that second. Might have been brief, but I only know this in hindsight. I didn't say, "Oh, look, it was his fault he tripped me and I fell down the handicap ramp. Those damn kids got in the way," you know. I couldn't blame anybody else. I looked at me for the first time and saw those eyes, dead as a doorknob. Dark, darkest pit of soul that I had ever seen. I hope I never forget her face. That's why I share my experience. I'll go anywhere on God's green earth so I don't forget. We can get comfortable. I can get comfortable. I have a job. I have a life. I have children. I have 18 grandchildren. I mean, come on now. That's a full-time life. But I'll never more forget that face. And I think that's what keeps me coming back. So I don't forget that face. I don't want to get too comfortable. I love my life. But this is first and foremost. This is everything to me. Because if I didn't have this, I wouldn't have that life. This wasn't the center of my life. I mean, 2 hours. I mean, no big deal to travel 2 hours to share God's message, to help one of his kids, hopefully, somewhere along the line. I'm just the messenger. I'm not the editor. You know? Tom Flynn used to say it all the time, "Just deliver the paper, Doreen, and go home." See, he says, you're just the paper girl. You're not the editor. Go home. And that's what I do. I show up, deliver the paper, and I go home. Not about me. I'm not a spokesperson for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just here to share my experience because it keeps me alive. It keeps me green. Keeps me here. And hopefully that experience will touch somebody's soul tonight and they'll say, "That happened to me. I understand what she's saying." Like the book says, that could possibly maybe. That could work for me. So I got to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I called my brother that night, got home, you know, of course. He had 4 years prior to me coming in, so I remember the wind stopped blowing. Woo, ain't it grand, the wind stopped blowing. I'm getting a little warm here. Called my brother. He took me to my first week meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Women were giving me their numbers, and I was throwing them away. I had the first part of that first step that night when I saw her face in the mirror. Thank God. So I thought, you know, if I just go to meetings, I'll be okay. So I did that. I heard 90 and 90. Don't know what that meant, but I figured, well, I might as well do it because everybody keeps saying do it. See, when I came to you on August 9th, 1998, this is no disrespect to anybody's journey. This is my experience, period. I came to you from my living room. Blows my mind. Because this is the only thing I've ever done. I had no experience. No detox rehabs, no psych ward doctor. I've family in psych wards. You know. I know what that meant. I worked in the medical field. And I had those thoughts of wanting to kill myself and drive my truck over a bridge every day. But I figured if I tell them, they put me somewhere like that. And, you know, then of course the mothering kicks in. Well, who's going to take care of my kids while I'm in the psych ward and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, all that guilt and shame starts following the thoughts. And not that I couldn't go there. I just knew what my family actually did, a divine intervention, and put one of my sisters in a psych ward. It was called Shepherd Pratt in Maryland, and she came out 2 months later and took her own life. I understood that. See, my alcoholic thinking is this. Instead of being, now, not, mind you, I'm not heartless at all. I was devastated my sister died. I just lost another sister 3 years ago. Well, I didn't lose her. I know where she's at. She's with God right now, but they say I lost them. I'm like, no, I know where they are. But, you know, she took her life. She shot herself in the head. I understood that. Because as I got into the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous, what does it say? That our disease centers in our mind. I wanted to take me out a long time ago. But then when she took her life, I was so selfish in that fact that I was devastated as a sister of the humanness. But my alcohol ego was like, how in the hell do you do something like that? I've been wanting to do that for so long. And now she done stole my scene. Now I saw the devastation my family went through, so now I can't take my life. I couldn't put my family through something like that. You know, this was the first death in the family. Suicidal anyway. I had a lot of suicides in cousins and nephews and all that, you know. So I lived with the thought. Wanting to drive my truck over a bridge every day, the last 5 years of my drunkenness. And couldn't tell anybody about it because I knew where they would put me, you know. And, you know, I was basically a drunk on the sofa when I got here. You know, kids, I come in the front door, kids have a beer waiting for me, or if I go in the front door, they would go out the back door. They got tired of me. I was tired of me. They got sick and tired of the way we were living. They walked past me like I didn't even exist anymore. I wasn't talking. I wasn't fighting. It was like the fighting was over. I just ceased to exist. I mean, I got to the end of my drunkenness on August 9th, 1998, when I came to you guys. The second part of that first step, I knew nothing what manageability meant or unmanageability meant, because those were like foreign words to me. But I heard a lady share at a conference one time. She was actually a sister. Sister Helen shared one time. She said, I never knew what unmanageability meant. She said, but I knew that my life was so damn unbearable, I couldn't take it. And oh my God, she like punched me right in my gut. I was like, that's the word I was trying to find. My life was so unbearable that if I could just hit you and get away with it, I would be happy. You ever just want to punch somebody and not get hit back? Because I don't like pain. You know, if you just hit them, I feel so much better. Because you know, you just got that coil just turning and turning and turning. And and then I'll at least be happy for a little while until that coil starts turning and gets twisted again. And thank God, I don't know where that coil went. If you found it, you can have it. I'm good. I don't have coils in my stomach anymore. I don't have buttons that people push. Oh my God, I don't know where all this is, like, kind of like Easy Does It and all that stuff, and keep coming back. Yes, keep coming back, honestly. Because I've been, they told me I could stay. I believed them. I didn't know you could leave AA. I blew my mind. They kept saying, keep coming back, and all this language that I was foreign to me. But so August 9th, 1998, I asked my brother for help. And I hung around these rooms for 90 days, and I want to say I hung around because I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't know what the concepts of the steps was, traditions, or anything along those lines. I really enjoyed the fellowship for quite some time. There is a spirit among us. You can feel it when you walk in. You come to Roosevelt 12 and 12 on Wednesday nights in York, PA, and you will feel the fellowship of the spirit. Because we are on point. Traditions, concepts, steps, we're all about it. We know what that 1 hour purpose is for. We're not here to talk about, you know, where you get your hair done and how, you know, who's laying who and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, it's all about that new person. You know? And believe me, I've gotten with some of the girls I sponsored, and we all gather in a flock together, and then my sponsor would remind me, would you walk up to a flock of girls when you're new? And I'm like, no, I'd be scared to go to a, because they're over there talking about me, you know? They're amongst themselves talking about me. It's got to be about me, you know? When I'm new, it's all about me. So she says, separate yourself out. A new girl's not going to come to a flock of women. She's going to come to you. Standing singular alone, it's easy to face one-on-one than in a flock of women. And I would sit sometimes alone. Sometimes I'd sit and all the girls I'd sponsored would surround me, and then I'd have to get up and move somewhere else. But these are things I was taught. See, I didn't know this stuff. It was all foreign to me. I had to be taught how to be a member of AA. It don't come natural to selfish, self-centered people like me. See, I wasn't attracted to anything when I got here, because I had been done with the men and the women when I got here. I wasn't seeking anything. I just wanted the pain to go away, like I said. So I met my sponsor, and I like to share this because she shares it, and it blows my mind. And you might think it's a cliche, but it's my experience, and I hope you look back in your hindsight someday and say, God was doing for me what I could not do for myself that night. So I'm hanging around these rooms, I'm going to meetings, and women are giving me their numbers, and I'm throwing them away because I'm not like you people yet. I hear people say, well, go to as many meetings as you drank. So I never drank on Tuesdays, so I started staying home on Tuesdays. This disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful when you're alone and you're in the rooms managing your own life. And I didn't even know I was doing that, but it was painful. So I started staying home on Tuesdays, and then my mind started thinking, well, you know, I've never really drank that much on Thursdays, so I started staying home on Thursdays, and you see, I'm backing out. I'm backing out, and this disease has got me in its grip. No sponsor, no steps. Fellowship, I love it, but it can only sustain for quite some time. I have to find this power that they talk about in the second step, and I didn't know all this until... I'm telling you everything in hindsight. Like I said, I'm not a spokesperson. This is my experience. I didn't know what this stuff meant. So I remember I was like going to stay home on Thursdays, and then my brother told me, well, his sponsor was sharing at a meeting, and I was like, okay, well, I'll show up to support him because, see, I am a people pleaser when I get here. So I'll support him. It'll be like one of those little honor badges. Look what I did. I showed up and supported my brother's sponsor, you know, and... Then I got to the point where he said it 3 times and then he never showed up. Well, this last time I was kind of like upset with him. We didn't know they're called resentments until we get here. But all I know is I was very angry with him because he didn't show up. So the last time he showed up, you know, he said again. But here's what happened. And I have 15 minutes, which this is all part of my spiritual journey that I'm unaware of. I'm just letting you know that. Because once I crossed the thresholds of Alcoholics Anonymous, my spiritual journey began without my permission. It started happening with no effort on my part whatsoever. I just got desperate enough to follow the directions that somebody else was willing to give me. And I got to this point where, you know, I'm like standing in my shower. I asked my brother on August 9th. I'm standing in my shower almost 90 days sober. Going to meetings, don't have a sponsor, you know, hanging out in the fellowship, enjoying the fellowship. My brother down my back, you need to get a sponsor during, you need to do these steps. I hear him, like, then he starts to sound like Charlie Brown's teacher. You know, like, rah, 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 that's all I hear. I don't know what resentment is, but I'm not liking him either. You know, and so I'm standing in my shower, close to 90 days sober, getting ready to go out to that meeting again. My brother's sponsor said he's going to be speaking at. And this thought crossed my mind. Talks about it in our literature. Says there will come a time and a place. And my sponsor reiterated it later on in the steps. She said, Doreen, there's going to come a time when the only thing between you and a drink is going to be the God of your understanding. She says, and I hope to hell you got one. Said, you're not going to get in touch with me. You're not going to be able to get in touch with any member of it. It's going to be between you, God, and the drink. And I've had that experience a few times. But that night, I'm standing in my shower 90 days sober, and I'm crying, God help me. I can't do this anymore. I can't keep I want to drink so bad, my body is screaming for it. I mean, it hurts. And the drink is like on me. It's right on me. And I know in Bill's story, he talks about fear sobered us for quite some time. That fear of that face in the mirror that night sobered me for quite some time. I didn't want to be that person anymore. I couldn't stand her. I hated me, and I didn't know that. So I remember, I'm like, in the shower, get ready to go out to this meeting. Now, I met this woman 2 weeks prior to that. I knew her. We grew up in the same neighborhood. See, I thought she was there to support her husband because, you know, my husband wasn't supporting me. Of course, you know, of course, it's all about me. So I didn't know she was an alcoholic. I didn't hear her say her name and that she was alcoholic because I was thinking about me the whole time I was in a meeting. That's usually what happens when I'm new. Because especially if you're in open discussion, you know, you're thinking about what you're gonna say when they call on you. So it's really, you don't even hear the speaker the whole time because you're constantly thinking about what you're going to say. And then you're like, what did the speaker just say? And they're like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. Like, they're even going to call on me? I mean, that's how selfish and self-centered I am. Like, they're even going to call on me. So I'm thinking about me the whole meeting. Totally missed the message of what the speaker even had to say. That's why my sponsor introduced me to speaker meetings early on, so I wouldn't have to think about what I needed to say when I was new. She gave me an out. She said, if people call on you, Doreen, she said, just tell them here you're here to listen. My sponsor didn't have me share until I did a fifth step. Because, see, she didn't want me to put that junk out in the meeting. That mess, not the message. See, I was a garbage can when I got here. I had all that crap, pile, all those things those people done to me. Don't you know who I am? Oh, it cracks me up now. And believe me, I'm not discrediting it. The pain is real. Thank God I won't have that pain today. So I met this woman August 9th. You know, my brother brings me in, takes me through my first couple of weeks of meeting, start getting out, you know, not too sure this is what, you know, but just know if I just don't drink, I'll be okay. You know, that's what I thought the rooms was about. So I ended up standing in my shower crying, God help me, I can't do this anymore. And I showed up at that meeting, and lo and behold, that woman standing right there at the walkway of the church. And I even said to her, I was like, oh my God, what are you doing here? She said, I don't know. She said, because I just spoke at this meeting 2 weeks ago. I asked my brother for help. He did exactly what a member of AA is supposed to do. He came over with his big book. He laid the sister aside, and he shared one alcoholic to another alcoholic. He didn't talk about us. He talked about that big book. 90 days sober, standing in my shower, crying, God help me, I can't do this anymore. This woman shows up, says she just spoke at this meeting 2 weeks ago, and she's never done a meeting that close before or after since that day. Now, I don't know about a power greater than yourself. I only know in hindsight, I'm only sober through this power greater than myself. Because I don't have the power to keep me sober. Even to this day. I don't look at numbers. I look at one day at a time. That's all I have. I'm just as sober today as the person that just walked in the door today. 24 hours is all I have. My sponsor was 7 years sober when I met her. I was like, I want to be 7 years sober. She said, well, then you'd have to be 7 years older. And I was like, yeah, we'll take it one day at a time. Thank you very much. How do I get older? And mind you, I was 37 when I got here. I'm not afraid to say I'm 56 this year. And I have never felt so young before I even got to the room today. I'm at the greatest of my life at 56, spiritually. The physical, I've had a few bouts. But you know, they always say, if I knew I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself when I was younger. You know, like the chair incident. Yeah. I've placed myself in positions to be harmed, raped, and killed. And I'm not saying, you know, Joe always says it, and I'll steal his line. You know, God doesn't reign just on the just. He reigns on the unjust too. rains on us equally. We're not different. Doesn't matter what my experience is, because you have to get your own experience. But I want to let you know, I believe today, this is the way God's always intended me to be. This was the life I was supposed to live before I went on that selfish and self-centered journey. I've harmed people to the point where some I can't even imagine. Forgiveness is the gift. I had 3 children when I got here. Like I said, they were 14, 16, and 18. And one of my children was molested through the process because I brought someone into my home so I could get a free babysitter. They lived with me for free, but they had to babysit. That was their due. Didn't even know it was happening right down the 2 doors from my head. Proud of these things? No. How do you give the innocence back to a child? All I can do is ask forgiveness and pray for the person. And I pray for their forgiveness. I always say it's not what the person's done. I do not credit what the person has done. But I have to pray for forgiveness in order to set me free and to set that bondage of self that they have with me. I am no longer attached to other people today. The 11th step today to me, and I've gone through the 9th step, and I've made my direct amends, and I've done face-to-face. I've even done the paper amend, because I had a friend in the past that I had caused him so much harm. By the time I got sober, he didn't have nothing to do with me, didn't take phone calls, anything anymore. Still to this day, if he was standing in front of my face, I'd be willing to make amends to him. That's my sponsor said, you just have to be willing. I don't care if it's 50 years down the road. If he shows up, I'm still willing to make amends to him. I haven't forgotten. I haven't forgotten what I've done. I don't live with that pain, but I haven't forgotten. I did the best I could, like the book says. We write them a letter. Some people we may not be able to make amends to. But it's water over the dam or under the bridge, whatever you want to hear, whatever way you want to go, over the dam or under the bridge. So 5 minutes I have. Do you need time in the end, or it says 54? Is that 8:54? Okay, cool. I'm gonna do a little demonstration, and I like this part. This is part of my spiritual journey, and when it was done, I was in the audience, and it kind of blew my mind. So hopefully it works for you. You know, just entertain me, because I like to be entertained every once in a while. I mean, I've been entertaining you for about 55 minutes, so come on, give me 3 minutes of your time. So what I'd like you all to do is close your eyes. Don't worry, the next person, they got their eyes closed too. They ain't looking at you. I'm the only one looking at you. Now, what are you pointing yourself? Point at yourself. Open your eyes. Miraculous way of life. Nobody said, hello, I'm up here where my disease centers in my mind. God enters in my heart. He don't go in my head. That's like off limits to him too. He knows what's up there. This thing was trying to kill me long time before I got the room today. Hey, thank God. There's a power greater than myself that I have nothing to do with my sobriety. I'm not perfect at 11 and 12, but I'll tell you, perfection is not why I'm here. I'm here because of the grace of God and you people. For laying your life aside, that my sponsor took 1 hour out of her life every day to teach me how to walk this way of life. And now we stand arm in arm on this journey. We are the bestest friends I've ever had. My sponsor was the first person that I developed a friendship with, because I can't have a friendship with God. I have this punishing idea. So my sponsor taught me how to be friends with her first. And she said, in order for you to build a relationship with anybody, you got to spend time with them. I mean, you guys and girls, you know, you guys go to the beach, you know, people say, I don't know how to meditate. Okay, guys on the beach, right? Checking out the girls in the bikinis, right? You're watching them go along the road. That's a form of meditation, because you ain't thinking about nothing but her on the in the bikini, right? You got a 10-second of meditation right there, right now. So it's really not what you're doing. It's what you're focusing on that makes the big deal. You know, it's like meditation. Meditation is nothing more than being still. In the biblical sense, I'm not a religious person, but I've heard people share, be still and know that I am. I am what I am because of God and nobody else. I am sober today